The Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
Hey guys, if you've got pets like I do and you want to keep them healthy, you should try Pets Life, a Minnesota pet care company that's partnered with us here at Cold Omaha, who has created an oral care product for your cat or dog that is 100% natural, 100% safe, and 100% guaranteed to improve your pet's oral health. You can save hundreds in vet bills and improve your pet's health by visiting PetsLife.com. PETZLife.com. Enter the promo code Omaha, as in Cold Omaha, and save 20% on every online order, or mention Omaha for 20% off any phone order. That's PetsLife.com, spelled with a Z. You can help your cat or dog have better oral hygiene. All right, back here for another episode of Midwest Swing. You can find us on Twitter at Midwest Swing Pod. We are part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. You can find Cold Omaha on Twitter at Cold Omaha MN. I'm your host, Brandon Warren. You can find me on Twitter at Brandon_Warren. And again, this week, kind of a quick turnaround, Tom, but we're back on the air here for another episode. This is Tom Schreier, co-founder of Cold Omaha, and on Twitter at TSchreier3. Tom, what's going on?
Not too much. It's still exciting, even with the Twins kind of in the dumps. It's unfortunate. Mike Berardino, who was on the show last week, what was that report he had? He was like, the Twins are kind of everyone's second choice, right, to trade.
Yeah, and he actually wrote an article, I want to say it posted yesterday, about the GM candidates, because obviously with Terry Ryan stepping down over the weekend last week, there's going to be a lot of talk about who they're going to be looking for a GM and all that. And he had 10 really good names. In addition to, I think, some internal lieutenants, he called them, in terms of Rob Antony, in terms of Mike Radcliffe, and I think even listed Darren Johnson. Hopefully, if your schedule, my schedule, and Mike's schedule allows, we can have a special trade deadline show late in the week and have some fun with that. So we'll start planning, see if we can do to deliver that for a special edition show, or maybe just in lieu of a show next week,
because
obviously, next Tuesday is going to be August 2nd, and since it's after the deadline, the Twins aren't playing all that well, maybe it will make sense to double up in 1 week after going late last. And so speaking of people who've been following teams that are struggling and playing poorly, we have today's guest, Ben D'Aronio. Ben, how's it going?
Going great, guys. How are you guys?
Doing good. And so, Ben, if I understand correctly, well, you're every now and then you're on Rotographs, which is where I write every Thursday, and then every now and then on the Fantasy Fix as well. You told me you're getting married this summer, which is pretty exciting.
Yep, exactly. So the baseball writing's been a little bit on the back burner, but I'm still, heavily involved in my fantasy team, so I'm always knowledgeable about what's going on in the league, especially with my very sad Braves.
Well, and so if we have any time to fill at the end, we can talk a little fantasy stuff as well. Anyway, Ben, you've been writing for Fangraphs and the Fangraphs family for quite a while. How did you get into that?
Yeah, I started off, I used to work at ESPN Stats and Info for about 6 months up in Bristol. And from there, I just wanted to really start making the baseball writing a big priority while I was finishing up my my master's degree. So I reached out to Eno, I think, or maybe vice versa, I forget exactly. That was probably 2011, 2012. So I started off on the fantasy side of things, and then I wrote a few articles and pitched a few stories to Dave Cameron and the main site, and then it kind of took off from there. And then at the same time, I was doing a lot of Braves writing at Capitol Avenue Club, and which was like the ESPN-centered Braves blog, and that got merged into Talking Chop, the SB Nation one, so I was doing a lot of Braves stuff over there. So until this summer, pretty much for the past 5 years, I was writing at least close to daily, consistently, about both the Braves and just baseball in general, and also the fantasy end of things.
Right now, are you around New York City? Is that where you live?
Exactly, yeah. I live pretty much right next to New York City in Weehawken, New Jersey.
Okay, and then as far as day-to-day stuff, I my understanding, again, I don't know for specifically, is that you're in finance?
Exactly.
So what do you do on a day-to-day basis?
So I'm in a client acquisition type role. So most of my job is getting clients to help manage their finances, more or less, ranging from small businesses to, private wealth management, people who are doing really well with their money, and helping them make good, smart decisions with their finances.
Okay, that sounds interesting. And you ended up getting the master's, I suspect?
Yes, I did. That was right as I got my job that I'm at now, like pretty much simultaneously. And at that point is really when I had to like take the gas off a little bit on the baseball writing.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was always kind of trying to transition that into a baseball career, and interviewing at front offices, which I did a little bit at that same time. But after talking to a number of people that went through that process, it just didn't seem too appealing to me on the money end in the long run.
Yeah, I've heard as much as far as people that have tried to do that. So,
exactly.
What was your initial tie to the Braves? I mean, where did you grow up, or what hooked you on the Braves from the get-go?
Yeah, that's a great question, because it is pretty random to be a Braves fan over right next to New York. But I moved around a lot when I was a little kid. My dad was a computer programmer and a contractor, so he would get different jobs for, you know, periods of time, like 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, stuff like that. And we were all over the East Coast for a little bit. Like, you know, we were up in upstate New York, we were in Pittsburgh, we were in South Jersey, where it's close to Philly, up in Jersey, all this kind of stuff. So the only team, and I always liked baseball when I was young, the only team that was always on everywhere I went was the Braves on TBS. So because we moved around a lot, it was easy for me to just follow that same team, because every night, no matter where we were living, they were still playing.
I think
a lot of people around my age, or maybe even a little bit older, that's how they got to be Braves fans. So if you go on Twitter, a lot of the Braves fans are not necessarily, you know, located in Atlanta or in the South even. A lot of them are just spread out everywhere. It's unfortunate that TBS doesn't still have that partnership. Otherwise, the team would probably have a couple more extra bucks by having a bigger, wider fan base.
It seems like there's some guys that are Carolina fans too, you know, Dan Simpson and a number of other guys. What's the tie there? Is it a similar situation?
I think it's just that there's not really any team over there in that area. Like they kind of get the whole South more or less, the Braves. And for the longest time, there wasn't even a Florida team either. So they get all of Florida, pretty much from Florida to Texas. There's no other baseball team, and from there to DC, there was no other, or to Baltimore, there was no team for a while either. So they just pretty much got most of the South up to like Kentucky, where they start becoming like Reds or Cardinal fans. So they had a big presence in the South, and there's also some minor league teams that are over there too. That they've positioned. There used to be a team in Carolina, or there is now too. But I think that's mostly what it is. Just the southern proximity to the Braves.
So, What about this Braves team? You know, the Twins fans can relate because they've had a tough year as well. In fact, mm-hmm. we had talked about this off the air. Both teams are the actual worst teams record-wise in their respective leagues. What has been interesting about this Braves team this year? Obviously, you're going to have to be pretty diehard to follow a Braves team like this. It's the same thing goes for the Twins. But what kind of things have hooked fans in or kept them engaged? You know, obviously, Freddie Freeman is doing Freddie Freeman things, and Julio Teheran is having a pretty good season. But what all is going on down there?
Yeah, I would say the bounce back year from Teheran's been great to see. It's funny because, you know, I've been going to Braves games my entire life since we moved to New Jersey, and I would go to, you know, Braves Mets games mostly because they would play more often until literally it came about. But me and my dad would always go all the time to Braves Mets games. So I saw, you know, Maddox, Smoltz, Clavin, all those guys like 100 times.
Mm-hmm.
And earlier this year, I go to a game for Father's Day. I take my dad out to Citi Field to, you know, watch a Braves Mets game, and Teheran's pitching. It was a one hit complete game shutout with no walks. Probably the best game pitch we've ever seen. Like, we've seen Maddox a million times, Clavin a million times. So it was really cool to see, and he's had a really great year. So just following him, making that step forward as he's, you know, entering his mid-20s, and, you know, we have him under contract for a long time. So it's been great to see him bounce back from the struggles that he had last year. Other than him, there have been a few pitchers that have been interesting to follow, at least. Matt Whistler, you know, he's had some good points and some bad points. You can kind of see where he's not too far away from developing into a decent middle to back end type rotation guy, which most teams eventually do need when they go to compete. But the one guy recently who's been very, very interesting and almost like a must watch for any Braves fans who's still interested in the team is Mike Fultonavich. He's really stepped up a lot the past few weeks. He throws in the high 90s, which is exciting to watch. He's pitching in this series, which will be fun from a Twins fan perspective to see what they think of the guy as well. But he definitely has some things he needs to work on. He gives up a lot of home runs, but of all the Braves that are kind of intriguing on the major league level, he's probably the one who's the most appealing to try and make it a point to sit down and watch.
What's your level of excitement for Folty and Tyler Duffy on Wednesday? Because I know you've long been a Tyler Duffy guy on Twitter.
Absolutely. And he's been having a rough go of it the past few weeks, maybe the months even. But, no, I think it'll be a good matchup, and I think that's the type of team that Duffy will really succeed against. I mean, so I have Duffy in my fantasy teams, and, you know, you can start him or sit him in, like, a weekly league. And for the past few weeks, I feel like every week he's been going up against, like, the Red Sox or the Blue Jays, something like that, where it's just like, man, that's a really rough matchup for a guy who's just trying to get his bearings under him at this point. So I think this will be a good bounce back week for him, and I think he'll kind of show, you know, the four pitch arsenal that he has, and I think it'll be a good game. Of all the games that I'm interested in watching, that's probably the one where I'm like, okay, cool, there's some interesting matchups there.
A lot of times when we're in the media lunchroom at Target Field getting ready to talk to the GM, in fact it was Terry Ryan before he decided to step down, there'd be different games on the TVs and the Braves would be on. And I'd watch Matt Whistler and see his stuff, like his raw stuff, and I'd be surprised his numbers aren't better. What goes into that for him? Because I think, I don't know if it was like a slider or what it is, but he's got really good movement on some of his pitches.
Yeah, and that's really developed recently. Up until, you know, the big problem he's had throughout the minors and last year specifically is not having an out pitch at all. Like, he didn't have a strikeout pitch. He can throw in, like, the lowish 90s, which is, you know, decent enough. And he has other pitches that he can throw for strikes pretty consistently, but he wasn't having any that would make them swing and miss. But I don't know the exact numbers, but I do know over the past few starts that he's had, up until maybe the past one or two, but for a string of starts he had, he was starting to miss bats a lot with his breaking balls, which is exciting to see. You know, his strikeouts in general all up this year, or at least they were. I didn't check to see if that got altered from his last start, but and his walks were down, so... he's making the progressions you want to see him make, and it just comes down to missing bats. He just needs to be able to miss bats a little bit more consistently, and I think he could eventually develop into like a number three on the top end, kind of like a Rick Porcello, I think, is the target for him. That's the guy he wants to emulate and kind of act as.
I think it's kind of amazing that Julio Teheran, am I saying that right?
Teheran.
Exactly. I think it's kind of amazing that he's 25 years old and yet has made 120 big league starts, 123 appearances. And, yeah, so this is probably going to be his finest big league season. You look across the board, and you know, he was pretty good in 2014 as a 23-year-old. And, again, it's remarkable he's put up these kind of numbers and all that by his age. But what has been different this year that has really made him take this next step forward?
It's a mixture of things, I would say. It's a combination of a lot of, I think, pressure off of him. It sounds weird because it's not really I'm a numbers guy, and a lot of the conversations I have are about the numbers. But going into this year, he didn't have the expectation of him being the ace of the squad. Like, he was the only, you know, notable pitcher, but, like, everybody pretty much knew the team was going to be pretty terrible. He was coming off a bad year. I think a lot of people got sour on him and thought maybe he is just not that great. Maybe that last year was really who he really is. But he started to really pound the zone more frequently, and I think that's just coming from confidence and understanding hitters more after having, you know, 2 years of 200 innings thrown. He's starting to pound the zone more, and when you're throwing strikes more often, you're often going to lead to more strikeouts and less walks, and that's really what's happened to him this year. He still gives up home runs at a pretty good rate, and he's pitched much better to lefties this year than he did last year. Last year, he's one of the worst pitchers in the league to lefties. I think that's kind of a mixture of a little bit of luck and just last year being really bad luck on that end. But I just think he's more confident now. And like you said, he's been in the league for a while. He started to figure out major league hitters. He's faced a lot of the same lineups over and over, the Nats, the Mets, the Marlins, pretty consistently. And it's funny because I feel the same way. He's, you know, he was one of our top signings in the minor league system in like 2006 as a 16-year-old. So it's been or 2007. So it's been a long time that we've had Julio Teheran in the mind as a Braves fan. It's kind of amazing. He's still only, you know, 25.
Yeah, and so he's a name that comes up a lot at this time of year, just because, you know, oh, bad team, good player. You got to think about moving him. But I think about $38 million over the next four seasons with options and all that stuff. There's basically no chance he gets moved, right?
Yeah, I think they were considering it for a little bit, or at least it was kind of being talked about a little bit more frequently. I would say like 3 to 4 weeks ago, the Red Sox were very interested because not only is he a target for a team to buy for now, but like you said, he's under contract at a really affordable rate for a long time. So people were thinking, yeah, I mean, if the Braves are still doing this rebuilding phase, why don't they move him and they can get a really, really big package back for him rather than just like a short-term rental. But I also see the side of it that the GM, Coppola, has taken, and he said that they're not going to trade him because if they're planning on competing anytime in the short term, they're going to need a guy like Julio Teheran to be either your number one or number two starter. So I think they're committing to him being one of those guys. Hopefully they try and build on top of him and get another starting pitcher, whether it be via trade or via free agent signing. But he's somebody that they've decided they're going to build around, and Coppola came out and said that they're not going to trade him, which I see as a totally reasonable move.
So I think he's got about the same number of years control and money left as Jose Quintana, who is a mm-hmm. very good pitcher as well. If you had to pick one or the other, is it pretty obvious for you, or are you kind of torn?
I would say it's actually, I'm a big Quintana fan. I've seen the developments he's made over the past number of years, too. I think they're pretty comparable. I think they both fit well with the team that they're on, too. Like, if I was the White Sox, I would rather have Quintana just because of the home run issues that Teheran had.
Yeah.
And if I'm the Braves, I'll probably want Julio just because he pounds the zone a little bit more frequently and is a little bit younger. So I think they're both pretty pretty comparable, and I think they're in good situations for their skill sets.
And to me, this is the kind of guy the Cubs, and everybody's talking about how the Cubs made this Chapman trade, and I'll ask you about that in just a second. He'd be the kind of guy that they'd target for that controllable young starter. I think it's kind of a bizarre year in baseball, though, where all the controllable young starters that you could imagine being traded, the Chris Archers, the Sonny Grays, specifically because of the teams they play on, but even Marcus Stroman, you know, have taken a step back. It's been a weird year for quasi-young pitchers. If that's the kind of guy that the Cubs are targeting, does it make sense to you that they really couldn't get a deal done for a pitcher like that? Because I know that's been the main gripe for Cubs fans. You know, what do you get a team that has everything they need? They already or don't has everything, but doesn't need anything except for, you know, luxurious pieces. You know, does it surprise you that they probably can't find a deal for a young guy like this because they probably don't really exist?
It would in terms of like if I wasn't positive of what the Braves wanted back, and Coppola was pretty clear in what he wanted to make sure he got back. He wanted kind of like a similar kind of deal that he got from Shelby Miller, and that he got mm-hmm. not only minor league talent back, but major league talent back in Andrés Ciarte. So he had said, if we are going to trade Teheran, this is maybe 2 months ago, like before he said, we're not trading him. And I assume that's because he didn't get the packages he wanted offered to him.
Yeah.
But he wanted major league talent back. And if you're thinking about a team like the Cubs that's going for it, or even the Red Sox, they're probably not as willing to give up major league talent because they're competing for it. They want to make sure that they're building on top of the talent that they have now, not just shifting some talent from one position to another. So if these teams are going to make the offers that the Braves want, they're going to want to have to give major league talent back. And I think that's because the Braves don't have this very long-term competitive horizon. They're not saying we want to be competitive in 3-4 years. I think they want to be competitive next year. And if they're going to do that, they're going to need a guy like Julio to be in the rotation. And if not him, they would need to have something back in return. It's going to help them in the short term also, not just in the long term.
Do you think that might be a future way that teams make trades more frequently is with equal parts big league talent and minor league talent to kind of mitigate the risk?
I think that's it depends on the situation, I think, and where you're at in the competitive time horizon mm-hmm. and also who you're getting back. Like, I know when the Braves traded for Ender and Ciarte in the Shelby Miller trade, a good deal of the writers and analysts out there thought that would be a great option to be able to trade him also. Like, if he plays well, then you can just move him too. And it's kind of what the Braves did, you know, the year before when they traded Jason Hayward for Shelby Miller, major league talent for major league talent. So I think that's definitely part of the Braves' philosophy, is to kind of make a trade, hopefully highlight a guy's skills and be able to move him for even more afterwards. And I think if teams are going to start doing that, it's not a bad move as long as you're able to get a guy that you think has the ability to perform at a higher level than he has been.
Now, Ciarte hasn't played well, consequently. What's going on there?
Yeah, I just don't think he's that great of a hitter. I think he's a really good defensive player. I just don't think he's got that much that skills at the bat. I think last year he got pretty fortunate. You know, he hit in a really great ballpark, and, he really took advantage of that situation. And you know, he had a good amount of extra base hits this year that just are not there now that he's in a more spacious Atlanta ballpark. I think he's... It's funny because entering the year, a lot of people felt the big guy that you wanted to focus on in terms of, is he going to be a major league starting center fielder, is the prospect Malik Smith. And he's actually performed at a better, when he was healthy before he broke his finger. Mm-hmm. He was performing like the starter, whereas Ciarte has been kind of performing as the fourth outfielder for most of the year. So I think the jury is still out on what Ciarte really is. But again, he's 25 also, and they have him at a pretty good, you know, they have a bunch of controllable years with him. So they'll take their time and find out whatever they think he is, whether it be, you know, a regular starter or the fourth outfield type.
Now, you mentioned defense. Is he good in center, or is it mostly corners that he's good?
NCRT is really good in center. He's been really dynamite pretty much everywhere, and probably has one of the top four or five arms in the game. So it's been fun to watch. We're watching Braves games. There's not that much to be too happy about, but seeing him play center, it's been very, very impressive. Probably the best guy we've had out there since Andrew.
Now, we did tease the Chapman trade a little bit. You are in New York City, and so you probably do have some perspective on that. What was your take on that move for both the Cubs and the Yankees?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly what both sides should be doing. I know people are upset about the amount that the Cubs paid for it. Like, as a Cubs fan, you feel like, man, we just gave up a whole lot for maybe 30 regular season innings and playoff innings combined, maybe.
Right.
And that's a lot to give up just for that. And I totally agree. But the position the Cubs have put themselves in with such young, cost-controlled talent and a good minor league system even on top of that is, you know what? You haven't won a World Series since 1908. Like, let's go for it. Let's try and make sure that we're going to make this team the best team that we can make it. And where else were they going to upgrade? You know, I didn't really see another spot where they could really add much more. Maybe they do another bench bat, but that's really not going to make the type of difference that a Chapman can make.
Well, and you can minimize the amount that Torres comes back and bites you by trading him to the other league and a opposite division besides. And again, keep in mind, this guy's 19 years old and in high A. There's so much that can happen between now and then. You know, I was kind of going back and forth with another writer on Twitter and just talking about how all these all-stars were traded as prospects. And it's like, yeah, well, you know, Andy Marte was traded, and he was supposed to be the next big thing. And Matt LaPorta in the CC Sabathia deal. And, you know, both those guys fell flat on their faces. You just don't know until you know. And that's why I really don't have a problem with it. I don't break the acquisition down from a personal standpoint, from a human being standpoint, because I'm just not equipped to do that. And because, honestly, I kind of get why teams don't do that either. You know, they were probably never meant to be the arbiter of human behavior off the field. You know, if the judicial system doesn't do their part, does that reflect poorly on the teams making these moves? I don't know. I don't know the right answer to that. So I just stay out of it because I think it'd be a sin of commission to actually try to put myself in that situation. But I think it was a good move for the Yankees to get what they did. But honestly, when you look at what the Cubs need, it is like buying a Father's Day gift and your dad doesn't need anything. So you go and get something superfluous.
It's a good situation for them. And the other big factor, I think, was the other team that was in contention to get Chapman was the Nationals, who are probably their biggest threat in the playoffs.
Absolutely.
So just imagine you're the Cubs and you don't pull the trigger on that trade and you see the Nationals get him. And then you end up losing to the Nationals in the playoffs in the team of the year that you had the best team that you've ever had. And now John Lester's a year older. John Lackey's a year older. You know, it's not only a zero-sum prospect for player. It's, man, they really are going to try and get a title. They're going to do everything in their power to do it. And they want to keep him from another guy as well that's going to be doing the same thing. So I can see why they paid so much. It's definitely a great move for the Yankees. I mean, see what they paid for in the winter, and now they got half a season of him, and then they were able to, have him help them compete, and they're still alive in some way, and then now they get a whole bunch of prospects back for it. It's pretty good deal for the Yankees. There's no other way to look at it, in my opinion.
Speaking of the Cubs, a player that I know is near and dear to your heart, or at least he was, what's going on with Jason Hayward?
Yeah, it's been a frustrating first season with the Cubs. I've been following his season pretty aggressively. Somebody I actually know somewhat personally in the game, so I do try and follow. And
oh yeah, that's right. You're Coach Ben, weren't you?
Exactly. We had a Twitter exchange, and then when I was in the Braves dugout, we were able to connect a little bit, and we've talked, probably a couple times a year since then. And it's just been a frustrating year for him. The power, I just don't understand. He's such a big guy, and he can hit it so far. Like when he does hit home runs, he hits them so far. But if you're looking at his Fangraphs page, it's like, where did the power go? You know, he's got an ISO under 100, and
yikes.
It's just hard to imagine a guy that's big, powerful, and strong just has had such issues at the plate. And it's clear that he's not really certain about the kind of hitter he should be at the plate, because if you go look at every single year that he's been in the league, his stance is completely different every single year. I just don't think he's found that consistent, this is who I am, this is how I hit, kind of kind of an approach yet. And it's unfortunate because when you look at his, you know, look at his back of his baseball card, you can see at different points in his career, he's done things really, really well offensively. He's ran really well at times. He's hit home runs really well at times. He's hit for average. He's lowered his strikeouts. He's had high walk rates. And then, you know, he just hasn't been able to put it all together for that one big year. But again, he's still pretty young, and hopefully he does figure that out. But the Cubs definitely will hope that he puts together a second half to make up for the very lackluster performance he's had so far.
You're saying you didn't expect him to have a lower ISO than Jace Peterson then?
Exactly, yeah. It's hard to, it's just such a weird thing, right? Like, to see a guy who's this big and powerful just not be able to hit home runs or doubles or triples or anything. It's right. Just it's hard to comprehend.
My contention is that nobody looks better in a baseball uniform than Jason Hayward. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I could see that. He's a and when you're in person with him too, he's just such a gigantic, beastly person. And I don't even think he needs to work at it either. I think if he just like showed up, like if he wasn't lifting, I'm pretty sure he would look exactly the same.
I hate those people. I hate those people.
Like perfect.
Oh man, I hate those people. Okay, so this upcoming series, the 2-game series, is a short one. The Twins end up heading down to Atlanta in August, where the teams might look drastically different as well. We'll talk a little trade deadline in just a little bit, but Lucas Harrell and Irvin Santana going tonight. I'll be at that one. Fulton Evich and Duffy tomorrow. Tom will be covering that one.
Yeah.
And so what is going on with Lucas Harrell? Because I believe, I'm going to scroll down to his numbers here. He's looked decent, hasn't he?
Yeah, and it's funny because just of how weak the overall starting pitching everywhere around the league is, he made like 2 good starts in his first 2, and then all of a sudden, you know, there's rumors about the Braves trying to trade him, which I think is hilarious.
Well, didn't that happen with Ulysses Chacin? Like, he made a couple decent starts and then was flipped to the Angels. I mean, maybe not exactly a very substantive deal.
But Norris, really, too.
Yeah, but I mean, pitching is just bizarre in the league right now.
And I think that's what the Braves are kind of hoping like they can do with Lucas Harrell over the next week. If he gives a good outing today, maybe some team gives something for him. You know, he's a 31-year-old journeyman. There's not much to be too appealed about when it comes to, you know, who Lucas Harrell is. But, you know, maybe a team just needs an arm and they'll pay something for him. But there's not too much to be excited about. He's your prototypical veteran, like doesn't throw too hard, doesn't really have that many strikeout pitches, or doesn't have that great a command. And it'll be a good opportunity for Twins hitters to tee off, I think.
This is actually probably the series with you in mind. Any warm remembrances of Irvin Santana in his Braves days?
Yeah, that year he was really, really impressive that year for the Braves. It was quite the season. He was quite the character. Like it was one guy, and that was the year that I was probably the most active in terms of like writing for writing specifically Braves related things, and being in the clubhouse for when they came up here and played in New York. And he had a really, really solid year, and it's, you know, part of the reason that the Twins gave him, you know, the free agent contract that they did. You know, he threw almost 200 innings, had a bunch of wins. The Braves were, you know, competitive at a time in that season, so he was a big part of them maintaining competitiveness. And And he was a fun guy to have around the clubhouse. There was this like smelling baseball thing that he was just like, you know, his Twitter account's really weird. He follows like 1 million people, but
not me though.
Built a persona.
He follows me.
Oh, I hate you, Tom. he's a good guy though, and I think it's a weird situation with the Twins where if they deal him, he's got a decent amount of money left. He's a decent pitcher, and you're not going to find another guy like him in this year's off-season market. So it might make sense just to hold him until the off-season and see what happens, but. You know, we'll see what happens. I did want to ask you, what's that?
I was going to say the Twins have had their rough spots in finding pitchers, and
right.
You know, when you have one that's kind of worked out okay compared to, you know, the Nolascos and the Hugheses, like kind of gotta hope you can hang on to this one and build on top of them with prospects and other types of pitchers.
Yeah, the only issue is you're doubling down. I think his age is 34 and 35 season for those last 2 years, so there's certainly a level. All those sliders will probably catch up to him at some point as well.
Sure.
And so you might want that to be somebody else's problem. I'm not certain about that. But the one thing I want to ask you about, the new stadium opening in Atlanta is obviously a very hotly contested issue. First of all, when is that opening? Is that next season already?
Yeah, next year it'll be open. It'll be opening up Centrist Park.
And so the uninitiated, what's kind of the big gripe around this stadium? Obviously, first of all, Turner Field is only, I think, 20 years old, and I think that was kind of one of the things that, that bug people, but maybe not the primary issue. But what are some other issues that are coming up in terms of, I know financing has been a big issue, location has been a big issue. What other things are kind of getting people's feathers all ruffled about this?
Yeah, those are definitely the big things. And kind of the thing I want to preface is me being a, you know, New Jerseyan / New Yorker, I am as out of touch with this kind of situation as any Braves fan is. I do have a speaking knowledge to it, and I understand what the issues are. But when I talk to some people that I know that live down there, and they're much more passionate, and they're following this story like daily and daily. I think the big thing comes from public funding of baseball stadiums.
And that's in Cobb County, right?
Exactly. So they're moving up from Inner City Atlanta, where the current stadium is.
Which would be Fulton County?
Baseball stadium. Exactly. I believe it's Atlanta Fulton County. That's like the area. So it's in the city of Atlanta, in the limits. And the stadium was never intended to be necessarily a baseball stadium. It was built for the Olympics, and they converted it over into a Major League Baseball stadium, you know, a year after they did the Olympics down in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. So it's a very big stadium. And throughout the 90s, when the Braves were winning left and right, and in the early 2000s, people would complain that the Braves wouldn't sell out playoff games. But if you look at how many seats the place holds, it's a lot bigger than everywhere else, than almost every other stadium. It's a gigantic stadium. And one thing they wanted to do was have a more baseball-oriented field. So I get wanting to move from that stadium to a new one. But the problem comes on where they're moving to, which is not inside the city of Atlanta. It's moving up to Cobb County, which is a northern county, a suburb of Atlanta, not actually in Atlanta. And then putting a lot of the burden on the taxpayers of Cobb County to have to pay for the stadium. And, you know, this was never really a big issue maybe 20 or so years ago when the other stadium got built. But with the advances of social media and just people being aware of this stuff, you know, this is a really big issue anytime any new stadium gets built. Is it being funded by the public? Is it taxpayers funding it, or is it these billionaire owners? And the Braves are owned by a gigantic media conglomerate. Why would the taxpayers of Cobb County now have to pay for the stadium? And it's totally, totally understandable that people are going to be upset about it. And it's also totally common, and it's not rare to the Braves that this is the way they do things.
I think the vote was kind of screwy too, right?
What's that?
The vote for it was kind of screwy too, I think I read.
Yeah, I remember that when that happened too. It was kind of like really rushed and stuff like that. I'm sure there's been a lot of corruption here, like all over the place in this stuff, which is, again, is bad, and it's not rare to the Braves and how they're operating almost every time. Like, even the Yankees had public funding in their stadium, which is like the Yankees, who have like the most money of any team that exists. Why would they need to have public funding?
Or the Cowboys.
Exactly. It's like, it's hard to believe that they do it this way, but they all do, and they do it in, you know, they're politicians. Politicians in their very nature are very, very shady in their dealings. So it hasn't been a pleasant experience. And now that everything is so public in terms of conversations that are had, in terms of voting that's had, and decisions, it's just been a big glaring mess for the past few years. And I think everybody involved in the Braves organization is just ready for it to be done and the new stadium to be up and running, and for everybody to put it in the past, like pretty much everybody else has done for every other city that's been built.
So, switching gears just a little bit, I think this is going to be a similar situation for the Twins, but with a trade deadline coming up on Monday, a week from yesterday, what is your level of anticipation for, like, activity for the Braves? Are there you know, roster spots to be cleared for the Twins? You know, it might even be as much as clearing a roster spot for Jose Berrios, you know, that kind of thing. Or do you expect activity because they have players other teams can use? You know, what's your level of anticipation for this deadline, maybe compared to previous seasons?
I actually don't think they're going to do too much at this deadline. They just don't have the type of assets that other teams are going to be looking for. They may have a reliever or two that somebody will pay something small for, like a Jim Johnson or something like that, but I don't expect there's going to be much that other teams are vying for. So I expect them to be pretty quiet. There's a chance that they're maybe more active in August with like an Eric Ivar type. If he hits well over the next month or so, their team may need his services in the middle infield. But I think it'll be a pretty quiet time. And the one thing that I think all of us are looking for as Braves fans, if you're following the team still, is after Ivar is traded or whatever happens to him, that Dansby Swanson and Ozzy Albies come up to take over the middle infield spots that they're hoping that they'll hold for, you know, the next decade.
Yeah, I had that written down on my pad next. Which one of those players are you more excited for? I think I know which, but I think they both bring different things to the table. Maybe give us a little primer of what each of those guys is about and then which one you're more excited for.
Totally. I think when you look at a Swanson, the hope and the focus around what he can do is that he can do everything pretty well. That he's not like a big power hitting shortstop like Trevor Story, but he's not like a speedster like he's going to steal 30, 40 bases. That's not really his game either. He's kind of a mix of everything in between. And I think the hope, and he's a Southern guy himself. He went to Vanderbilt. He's from down in Georgia, I believe. So he's a Southern guy. And I think the hope that Braves fans have is that he ends up being like their version of Jeter, like the South's version of Derek Jeter. Like he's like that kind of guy who they want to be the face of the team, to be the guy who can do everything, bat at the top of the lineup, make great defensive plays, and just be that type of a player. And I think that's
Do fans ever try to shoehorn like that kind of guy into a Chipper Jones role? I mean, do they still kind of feel like Chipper is a deity down there, or am I reading that situation wrong?
Yeah, I mean, Chipper definitely is, but I think he's all on his own. There's not going to be somebody like Chipper for a long time. Drafted as a Brave, never left the team, did everything for the team, moved positions for the team, mm-hmm. and was there while they won the World Series. I haven't heard anybody compare anybody to Chipper. I've heard a lot of different comparisons to people. Clavin's every time there's a good lefty in the minors, or Smoltz every now and then when there's a guy like Fulton Avish that can throw in the upper 90s. But mm-hmm. I've never heard anybody compare anybody to Chipper just because his talents and skills are so rare. But I would think Swanson would probably be like the most talented prospect they've had probably since Hayward. So the hope is that they can get him up here and that he'll be the shortstop for, the next decade, like I said before. He's the one I'm probably more excited about in terms of what he can do overall. Albies is a very exciting prospect, too. He reminds me a lot of a Gene Segura type, where he's going to be able to run a lot, hit for some power, probably doesn't walk much, but a very exciting type of a player.
What other guys are in the system? Because obviously when you're a team that is playing like this, fans will gravitate towards the system. Now with the Twins, a number of those guys are up, whether it's Max Kepler, Byron Buxton, Miguel Sano. But who are some of the next wave of players that people are keeping an eye on as far as the baby Braves, so to speak?
Yeah, for sure. And the way the Braves have done their rebuilding is a little different than like the Twins have, or like the Rangers did when they were building their great farm system that they have, is that the Braves don't probably have the type of top-end talent like the Twins have had come up recently, or like the Rangers have had with like Mazzara and all those type of guys too. So the Braves have a lot of good players, like a lot of them. So I think in Baseball America's top 100, they had like six guys in there, but only a couple were near the very top, like Swanson and Albies. The rest are kind of like, really, really solid prospects with a lot of upside. And when you compile that many guys who have high upside, I think the hope is that eventually some of them will hit, and that some of them will be better than expected. Obviously, some will be worse, but when you have that many guys with really talented skill sets, the hope is that a few of them end up hitting and reaching their full potential. So a lot of those are pitchers. The one thing that they've done over the past 2 years is compile a lot of pitching prospects, specifically the upper minors. The pitcher they got from Los Angeles Angels in the Andrew Simmons deal, Sean Newcomb, is probably the most highly regarded prospect that they have mm-hmm. in terms of starting pitching. He has really big control problems, but I expect him to be up sometime next year. Aside from him, they have a prospect they got in the B.J. Upton / Craig Kimbrell trade, who's a outfielder. He was originally a third baseman who was kind of like a throw-in in the deal, but he's performed outstandingly as a hitter over the past year and a half, is Dustin Peterson. He's a left fielder. He's been playing at Double-A with Swanson and Albies. And so if you're looking at a Brave box score, the one that everybody gravitates towards is the Double-A Mississippi roster, because that's where the big talent is at right now. And Dustin Peterson arguably been the best hitter of the three there so far. So I think a lot of people are very excited about him. And they have a lot of those guys coming up in Double-A and Triple-A, but their higher-end prospects are a little further away. They just signed Kevin Maytin, who's like, the top-end international signing. And they've had some first-round picks over the past few years that people are very, very happy about, but they're just so far away because they were high school pitchers.
Yeah, like I think Colby Allard is one of those and
exactly.
a few others. So that's interesting. It looks like they're left-handed pitching heavy at the top, at least. Maybe not so much towards the middle with Lucas Sims and guys like that. But
that
yeah. So if the you know there's a number of prospects at Double A and some higher end pitchers that are high school pitchers, what's a reasonable contention window? I know you had mentioned, you know, maybe as early as next season. I think fans in a way are usually a little bit ambitious as well, but you know, a reasonable contention window, maybe to be 500. You know, what's that for you?
Yeah, I think the fans are actually more pessimistic than others are in these kind of situations, which is rare. I agree with you. Most times people are like, yeah, they'll be good soon because they have a top system. But in this situation, I think most people look at the farm system and they don't see the top-end talent necessarily that's right on the cusp. They think, you know what, I think it'll be a couple years away. I'm actually different, and it's not because I'm a diehard Braves fan where I'm trying to look through the lens of like the team going well soon. I actually do just see everything kind of working out perfectly for it to be next year, for the competitive window to really start, like, you know, them to be at least around 500 next year, if not surprise some people. Only because they have about, you know, recent reports have said they'll have about $60 million to spend next year. They'll be able to plug two holes really quickly, assuming that Swanson and Albies are able to hit, which I think that they will be able to do. And then the other thing they'll have to do is, you know, find out where they can spend the $60 million. And I think it'll be a mix between third base, left field, and catcher. And if they're able to spend that and, you know, get a guy like a Justin Turner or, you know, a Mark Trumbo for a couple of those spots on, you know, not too big of a deal because they're a little bit older, but on higher cash deals, I think they'll be able to compete in the short term. And, you know, they do have a great farm system that they can make a lot of trades through. So if they're trying to build to fill in some starters or bullpen pieces, I think they'd be able to trade a lot of their excess prospects to be able to do that.
I saw you mention Matt Wieters, too, a couple weeks ago on Twitter. What are there any other free agents that you're really thinking of, or are those kind of the three main ones that you would hone in on if you were copy?
It's tough because I haven't really seen what he does in free agency when he's trying to build a team.
Yeah.
Like, I know how Frank Wren was acting as a while, and it was always kind of be just somebody out of the blue that you weren't even considering. I think a Wilson Ramos is somebody who's, I believe, a free agent this year. He's going to be somebody who a lot of people are looking at.
Yeah, Twins will be on that list too, I'm sure.
And he's having probably the best year of his career, which is, you know, in my estimation, a bad time to sign a free agent. After they just had that best year, now you're paying for that to be the regular performance, and the likelihood is that that's not going to be what happens. But it's tough to say which ones they go after. I do know that the positions that they'll be looking to fill are going to be catcher, an outfield spot, and third base. And they may be involved in some trades too, trying to move Nick Markakis off the team to somewhere else and stuff like that. But I expect those to be the places that they fill. And what will really determine whether they're competitive in the short term or in a few years is the development of a guy like a Fulton Evich. You know, if he's able to really step up and be a top-end starter, then that's going to really escalate the timeline. If he ends up struggling and still having these home run problems, then maybe it's going to take a little bit longer because they don't have the top-end type pitching if he's not there. You know, if it's him and Tehran that are pitching at their top abilities, that could be a decent 1-2 combo to, you know, compete and start making the necessary strides. But if it's only Tehran and a bunch of other guys, it's going to be hard.
What's the situation on Hector Oliveira right now? Again, probably a real negative situation to bring up, but I see that he's still considered on the 40-man roster and going through some stuff. What's his situation?
So he's rehabbing because he gets to go on a rehab stint after this whole mess in the GCL, so rookie ball. And apparently he's been hitting terribly. I think last time I checked, he had like a batting average under 100. It's a complete mess of a situation from a baseball standpoint, from a non-baseball standpoint. And what I love about John Coppola is that he, he came out and said that was a bad trade. Like, I made a mistake on that trade, and, you know, hopefully I learned from that and don't make the same type of mistakes that I made in that trade. And this is a trade that he made a year ago for a guy that's still on the team. It's not like he's looking back and saying, like, yeah, that trade I made 20 years ago was really bad. He's saying, that deal that I made last year that people are upset about, yep, I agree. It was a bad deal. I have to do better than that. And I really like that he came out and said that and really owned up to it being a pretty bad deal for, you know, two guys who were really valuable assets that I wish we could have gotten more for or utilized.
So, to end on a positive note after that, how awesome is Freddie Freeman for you guys to watch every single night?
He's been, it's funny because his main quality is his consistency, and this year he hasn't been that, but it's been fun to watch during his hot streaks because when he keeps his hands right where they need to be, he has one of the most shortest compact swings that there are, and he can still hit the ball really, really far. to every side of the field too. So he's a fun hitter to watch. I think it's frustrating because I think on a really, really great team, he's not like the guy. He's like a guy, like that's like a very good solid player that you're really happy that you have. So it's great to see him consistently hit for the past few years. I just hope that they don't expect that he'll be like the one hitter you can build your entire team around, where they should be trying to build around a couple guys like him, or have one guy who's like, you know, a certified, you know, all-star Hall of Fame type and build around him. Because I don't really think Freeman's that kind of a guy. But, you know, he's a very exciting player to watch hit, and he's got a really great skill set for what he's been able to develop since he's been drafted. You know, his walk rate's gone up, his power's gone up, his average is usually pretty high. So he's a very consistent hitter over the course of the overall season. This year's been a little interesting because he's had peaks and valleys. But, you know, as a baseball fan, he's a fun guy to watch hit for sure.
Well, Ben, thanks for joining us, taking time out of your day on your Tuesday. I suspect you've got some work to do and everything. So we really appreciate it. Good luck to your Braves here as they ascend on Target Field for a couple games here. And hopefully we'll chat again with you real soon.
Yeah, it'd be great, man. Thanks for having me on, guys. Enjoy the series.
You bet. This has been Midwest Swing, part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
Hey guys, this is Tom Schreier, co-founder of ColdOmaha.com. Thank you for listening to the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes and leave us a comment and a rating. Also, don't forget to check out ColdOmaha.com to see all of our podcasts and read articles about your favorite teams in the Twin Cities. If you have any suggestions or comments on anything related to Cold Omaha, email us at editors@ColdOmaha.com or follow us on Twitter @ColdOmahaMN.